Hi, everyone. This is the How to Lower Your Tax Bill podcast. I'm your host, Terrence Hutchins. I'm a financial and tax advisor in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And the goal of this podcast is to help you listeners get educated on different tax strategies that you can implement to improve your tax situation immediately. Each episode, we'll break down useful tax tips you can use to save money, no matter what your personal or business income situation. Because our motto is, keep more of what you earn. So let's get into today's episode. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of How to Lower Your Tax Bill. We have been going through some different things that impact real estate investors. And so we want to pivot slightly. And as tax season has wrapped up, most people kind of don't think about taxes anymore. But there's a lot of information on your last year's tax return that should impact how you think about this year. So we're going to talk about some of that stuff over time. But I also want to think through, what are the facts of your situation this year that you need to properly be accounting for? And we're going to talk about this concept of phantom income. And many times when people make decisions, they do it with a short-term lens. And so how many times have you, think about the marshmallow test, where if you don't eat the marshmallow today, you get two marshmallows in the future. Most people decide to just, hey, let me just take that marshmallow now, because they're not willing to wait for something better in the future. From a tax lens, it's generally, what can I do today to help me save in taxes without thinking about what ramifications will that have in the future? And so I want to touch on two concepts that sort of are the foundation of how these impact taxes and how you could actually be paying taxes on income, or you could be paying taxes on a higher level than you actually have cash to pay. Or maybe you sold something and you thought that the tax on it would be commensurate to the profit that you had, but you didn't factor in some of the other elements. So I'll go through some specific examples so you guys don't get lost and you hang in there with me. And I think you'll be able to determine if this is applicable. You'll definitely want to make some changes or plan ahead appropriately. So the IRS has what they call the constructive receipt doctrine, which means that you get taxed on income when it's made available to you. And sometimes that may not even be money you receive, but the IRS says that you have the ability to get it, then you actually will pay taxes on it in the year that you have the ability to get it. A simplistic example of that would be, you get a bonus from your employer of $10,000. However, you don't pick up the check until January. Well, according to your employer, the bonus is paid out in December. They're probably going to write it off in December. Because of that, you're going to pay taxes on it in the year that you effectively received it, even if you didn't actually have the money in hand until the next year. So that constructive receipt doctrine will impact other things, which we'll go through later. You also have the economic benefit doctrine, which is means you get taxed on benefits that are secured for you, even if you can't use them yet. So for example, if you receive something that you get some kind of benefit for, this could be stock, it could be money that goes into a trust, it could be different things, you could actually pay tax on that money today, even if you don't actually have it. People get frustrated with that because they're thinking, well, yeah, I mean, this money did come to me, but if I don't actually have it, I can't use the money in their minds. But from the IRS's vantage point, you received an economic benefit whenever you got it. And as a result, you're going to pay tax on it in that year. And so there's different things that rule will impact. So we'll kind of walk through those. But the biggest thing that I see people doing that impacts them that they really don't plan for in the future. So you probably had this conversation if you're a business owner. At the end of the year, you get your tax bill and it's higher than you thought. And you're thinking, well, what can I do? Or not even that you get your tax bill. You basically get your tax projection. Let's say you're planning a little bit ahead. You're doing this in December, of course. And now you owe $10,000, $20,000, $30,000. Well, you go and say, hey, look, what if I buy this car? I see that Tesla Model Y, which you're probably not buying that now. Maybe you're buying that, large Mercedes-Benz or that big truck or whatever it is. And you say, hey, look, if I buy this $80,000 car, I heard this thing called bonus depreciation. I could take a big tax deduction on it. And so let's say you do that. You buy this $80,000 car after depreciation expense, that's a $60,000 deduction. So all of a sudden, your $15,000 tax bill, $20,000 tax bill went away. You're high-fiving, you're thinking, oh, this is amazing. Well, what happens is that car has a five-year shelf life. So if you, let's say in that example, you took a $60,000 deduction in year one, That means you only have $20,000 left for tax purposes to depreciate. So you have four more years. So think about that, $20,000 is going to be spread out over four more years. Now, you could also write off the gas and interest and stuff like that. However, the payment for that car, if you didn't pay it in cash, is going to linger with you for the amount of the loan. So you could be paying, you know, $1,200, $1,300, $1,400 a month. So you're thinking, hey, I'm only getting a $5,000 tax benefit, but I'm paying $14,000 out of pocket. And when you think about that disparity, you're basically paying income on that $9,000 difference. So if you're saying, hey, my out-of-pocket expense is $14,000, my tax benefit is $5,000, well, that extra $9,000, the IRS basically allowed you to take it up front. So that's how you were able to save taxes in year one, but then you end up paying more taxes on income that you don't actually have. So the cash left your bank account, but you're still paying taxes on that $9,000 difference. And many people do not think about this from year to year. And it's important to understand, hey, what is my depreciation today versus what is my depreciation in the future? And look at your situation holistically so that you can plan accordingly so that you're not hit with another tax bill the next year. And then you're trying to scramble and you're making short-term decisions. So I always tell people, do not pay a dollar to save 30 cents. In the same way, if you went to the mall and you saw a store that you didn't like, had a sale, just keep walking. Don't go in there and buy something because it's just probably going to collect dust in your house. Well, from a tax standpoint, you might be putting a Band-Aid on the situation today, but it might end up hurting you in the future if you don't have a holistic tax plan like that. Other things that could also happen, for example, with stock options. So there are different stock options, and on a future episode, we'll go through them more in depth. But sometimes if you have a stock option that does not have the quote unquote risk of forfeiture, so like it could be a non-qualified stock, for example, the IRS says, all right, you got the stock and you may owe tax on the fair market value of the stock versus the exercise price. So if you exercise that stock, sometimes you may not even get the cash for the stock because you want to keep it. Well, the IRS says, hey, you exercise this stock, which means that you could technically get it at any point. So you say, hey, the exercise price is $10. The fair market value is $50. I'm going to owe tax on $40, even if I don't actually sell the stock. And so that's important to know, all right, what am I doing here? And sometimes it makes sense to exercise the stock and sometimes it doesn't. Or sometimes depending on the trajectory of the company or the timeline you're on, it could make sense to do that. But you want to be aware, if I do this, is there going to be a tax impact as a result? And so many people aren't going to keep track of that on their own. And so if you're in that situation where you have stocks or, you know, stock compensation are a component of your pay, then you want to make sure that you're working with a professional that can help you with your claiming or exercise decisions. So that way you will be able to plan accordingly. The other part that a lot of people get caught off guard, especially when it comes to real estate, is what's called depreciation recapture. And many times you see online people talk about, hey, I made $500,000 and I didn't pay any taxes last year. Well, normally they probably had some kind of accelerated depreciation, which is the IRS allowing you to use your money to take a tax deduction today. So then you pay less taxes. And ideally you have that money to reinvest. So I always instruct my business owners, when you're making a decision, you always want to set your taxes aside. It's always easier to plan on how to spend money that you already have set aside. So if you have a $10,000 tax bill, ideally we've planned ahead to where, hey, I have $10,000 set aside. If you don't factor in taxes, you will end up paying more. I try to stress this to people and I tell them, hey, try to live your lifestyle based on your after-tax income. The IRS is your partner. We try to help you leverage their rules so you don't pay them more than you should. But if you don't treat them as a partner, meaning that they're going to take a portion of your money, or you're not at least setting aside a portion of your money that could go to them, then you're going to have bad options. In those bad options, you'll probably end up paying more. Now, when you do a cost segregation study, for example, when you buy a building, you take this big depreciation expense, or even if you just took regular depreciation, and let's just say that building really didn't go up that much in value. So let's just say over time, you bought a $1 million building, you took $300,000 in depreciation, and the building only went up to 1.1, or hey, maybe I got to sell this because the market or whatever. Well, I have a $100,000 profit. I'm going to pay tax on $100,000 at capital gains tax rates, which generally might be 15%. However, you also are going to pay depreciation recapture on that $300,000, which might be closer to 25%. So think about it. You basically say, hey, I made a $100,000 profit and I'm about to pay $75,000 in depreciation recapture plus another $15,000 in capital gains. So, hey, I got a $90,000 tax bill on a $100,000 profit. Now, you forgot about that depreciation in prior years. And depending on your status as a real estate professional or passive activity loss rules, you may not have any losses to offset that. And so those are things that are important. When you sell an asset, you need to make sure, okay, what is the tax impact of that? And I need to plan accordingly to my facts for that year. That's why your tax situation is not just a one-year thing. You want to have a multi-year view so that if I do decide to sell something, I'm going to make sure it doesn't coincide with factors that make the situation worse. Or hey, maybe it does coincide with other factors where I have low income years or I have a big loss I can use to help offset some of my profit. So those are things where, hey, I actually have potentially as big of a tax bill as my profit, or I have a profit on paper, but I don't have the cash to show for it, like with the depreciation on your big car. Other things that are very common that most people will find out if they're in partnerships or S corporations. And so I tell people, when you own the business, you individually pay taxes on the profit of the business. Now, what you do with that profit is really up to you or your partners. But oftentimes, if I see partners that join bigger groups, I always want to compare, hey, what's on line one of your K-1 versus, let's say, line 16? That will tell me, how much money are you paying taxes on versus how much money came to you in a distribution? We'll go through this more strategically on a future episode as far as how you might think about this as a business owner and how you might have a tax management plan so that you can properly account for this. But oftentimes, let's just say that you made $100,000 in profit, you're going to pay tax on $100,000. Now, whether you decided, hey, look, I need to leave this money in the business, or going back to my big car analogy, on paper, you made $100,000, but you have all this debt that you accrued that you're having to pay on. And when you make a debt payment, that's a principal payment. Part of it is that principal payment is not deductible. So if you have $30,000 of principal payments, that's just cash that's coming out of your bank account. So even if your profit showed $100,000, you may have only got $70,000 of cash to show for it. And then you might have left $20,000 in the business. So now you only distributed out $50,000. So on paper, you're paying tax on $100,000, but what actually came to your personal account was $50,000. And this creates an issue for people. And this is why we tell people your business should pay your taxes. So this is why you build your lifestyle on your after-tax income, but your business should pay your taxes, meaning I should take a distribution of my profits that are going to go towards my taxes. And then what I have is left over to use for myself. So like I said, we'll go through that tax management process a little bit more in a future episode. But that's a big, big thing for people, especially when they're in partnerships or S corporations, where they're like, well, why am I paying all these taxes when I didn't actually receive this money? There's something you're going to have to figure out. And then even if the partnership wants to pay out a tax distribution to everyone to cover their amount of profits that they're going to be liable to pay taxes on. So a few other things that catch people off guard that are taxable that had an economic benefit, as we talked about earlier, but they didn't necessarily impact the amount of cash they had. So for example, if you have a debt that gets canceled, that debt sometimes can be considered income because you got an economic benefit of not having to pay it. This happens often with, let's say if you sold a partnership interest and now the person that buys your interest is also assuming the debt that you're liable for. Well, that is considered a distribution and that could be taxable depending on your situation. Or let's just say you had a $10,000 credit card bill that you'd never paid and the company decided to write it off. Well, that $10,000 could show up on your tax return on a 1095C form. And that would show, hey, you made $10,000. Because that income or that debt that you had, you now got an economic benefit from it. And so you may have to pay tax on that. So I've had people pay tax on that in situations. You also could have a below market loan. Now, this is generally only going to be scrutinized for like high net worth people. But let's just say you loan your friend money or you loan your family member an interest-free loan. Well, the IRS basically says you have to charge interest. So there's kind of two components to this. You have the element of, all right, if I sort of give money away in this quote unquote loan, but I'm charging below market rates, then the IRS could consider that a gift. And if you're a high net worth person, you may have so much gifts that you've given that, or let's say you have all these loans that have accrued, that the IRS actually are considering gifts to where it now actually starts taking away from your gift tax exemption. The other part is more so, hey, I see this more with like installment agreements, for example, where, hey, I'm going to give you money or, hey, I'm going to sell you this item and you're going to pay me back over time. Well, the IRS says you have to charge interest in that situation. And so if you receive money back, the IRS is going to say, hey, your agreement said you're going to receive $10,000 back. So, hey, you sold it for $50, you're going to get $10,000 back for 5 years, hypothetically. Well, the IRS is going to say, hey, that payment, a portion of that is going to be interest, and you're going to pay tax on that interest. And so it's important to, if you do an installment agreement, that you do have at least the minimum interest rate tied to it. Because if you receive that money, instead of you paying capital gains on all of it, let's say when you receive it back, you're going to pay income tax on the interest component. And that will throw people off, and it will make them want to rethink how they do things. So a few other things, I see interest on investment items. So for example, if I buy a zero coupon bond, even if I'm not getting my interest until the bond matures, the amount of interest that's effectively accruing, I could pay tax on that amount. So, hey, I bought this bond for $10,000, but it was actually only worth $9,000. So I bought it for $9,000. That $1,000, let's say it matures over 5 years. Well, $200 of that is basically considered the imputed interest, as the IRS would consider it. And I'll pay tax on that $200, even if I don't receive my money back until the end of the 5 years. So that's kind of technical, but those are things that if you're in investment situations, or you're selling things over multiple years, or you have an agreement that spans multiple years, it's important to understand what is the amount of tax I owe today versus what I could pay in the future. Or if I'm taking depreciation today, how is that going to impact my cash flow tomorrow? And then how is that going to impact my taxes? Or if I am in a partnership, what's our profits? How much am I going to pay tax on those profits versus how much cash am I actually receiving? So those are probably your three big categories relative to that whole constructive receipt or economic benefit doctrine that I mentioned earlier, to be aware of so that you could plan accordingly and you're not caught off guard by the tax bill that you have. So let me give you an old tax case that will illustrate this point and how sometimes the IRS isn't friendly when they think you have received money that you may not actually possess, but they feel that you have an economic benefit from it. In 1945, there was a case called Sproul versus Commissioner, where Mr. Sproul's employer wanted to reward him for work he had done in the past. So the company put $10,500 into a trust, and that trust was to be managed by someone else, and then it was supposed to be paid out to him over subsequent years in the future. And when the trust was funded, the IRS deemed that this money was his, even if he couldn't get to it right away. So they said, hey, the money went in 1945. You're not going to get it till 1946 or 1947, but you're guaranteed to get that money. So you have no risk of that money being forfeited. And because there's no risk of it being forfeited, it effectively is yours. And so you have the right to the money. And because of that, you're going to have to pay tax on that $10,500 in 1945. All right. And so if you have an employer that does this, so this happens with like non-deferred comp, it could happen with stocks, where from the IRS's standpoint, you have an economic benefit, which means you receive this money, you receive this stock today, even if there are terms that kind of spell out when you're going to get it in the future. If you don't have a risk of losing the money, or there's no strings attached to you eventually getting it, then that money could be considered taxable in that year, which means I'm going to have to report money and pay taxes on dollars that aren't physically in my possession. And so that is important to understand. If you're in that situation, you need to plan accordingly. And the IRS may not, you know, they might rule against you, or the tax court, I should say, might rule against you in that situation, because there's different precedent that, like this case, that would suggest that Mr. Sproul did have to pay the tax on that $10,500 in the year that he received it. So hopefully you took some good tips away. As our motto is, keep more of what you earn, and we will talk to you on a future episode.